Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Well, I think it was last week. Was it last week? It was International UFO Day, and I posted a question on Facebook from the radio station. I only got a couple of responses. How many people believe in UFOs? The gal I work with said, no, she doesn't. And I said, yes, I do. And then I was surprised on Facebook. I think it was like 3 and 3. 3 people said no. 3 people said yes. Some people thought it was ludicrous. There's still plenty of that out there, isn't it? You know, if you just listen to some other people, how can everybody be a crackpot? You know, how can everybody that's out there be a crackpot? They're all making it up. They all must be seeing things. I've witnessed it myself a couple of times. Did I believe it before that? Absolutely. I witnessed at a young age, though. I was like 8 years old when I saw a UFO. Now, it could have been something else. I don't know. I remember my brother and I, I looked out the window, my bedroom window. My parents were sitting outside in the lawn chair looking at the stars, and I looked over at the horizon, the eastern horizon, and there was this craft, and it was moving across the sky very slowly, and it looked like it had a few different colors that were rotating around it. It was very big because it's on the end of the horizon. It's huge. And as I looked at it, I said, "Hey, Mom, what's that?" And she went, and her and Dad watched it slowly move from north to south, and then eventually gone. And, you know, it certainly wasn't a fast-moving UFO. But it was really slow compared to anything else, and it had more than just a couple typical lights that you would find on a plane. I think there was I don't remember exactly, red light, I believe, could have been a green and maybe a yellow, I don't know. Now, maybe there was some kind of vehicle plane that just, the thing just seemed to take forever to move from the north to the south of the horizon. And my mom never did tell me what she thought. She said one time, "Oh, I think I know what it was," and she never told me, you know. And we believed in UFOs. So I'm open to the possibility that that maybe was nothing. And then in 2006, 2007, I was driving home. And I was just about to a small town called Bark River. I was going through the passing lane. The sun was kind of in my eye, and I kind of glanced at the sun. And while I was doing so, I saw this metallic craft. The thing is, I couldn't see the craft clearly. I could only see it when it turned. I would see something shining. Otherwise, I could not see it at all. And it was going slow. It was going maybe just slightly than the speed of cars down below at 60 miles an hour. And it was very low. It was very, very low. And I kept getting closer to what's called the casino, which is in Harris, Michigan. And that was just a couple of miles closer. And I thought, God, that might even be too low to hit the casino. Casino's got several stories building, you know. And I wouldn't see it. And then I noticed whenever it turned, I would get a glimpse of it. I couldn't tell if it was oval, but it was silver metallic. And for a while, I thought, well, it's probably a plane, you know. And I talked to my friend who used to be former military, Air Force, and he said, nope, they stopped doing that. You cannot have a plane that's silver metallic because of the reflection that it can cause, and that could cause an accident. So he said, what you saw was not a plane of any sort. So what could it be? And then there was the time in 1992 when I got a visitation from a gray. Well, we'll skip right by that. You didn't hear about that? I used to be afraid to tell this story. Now I don't care at all. I don't care. I had desired to meet a gray after I had read Whitley Strieber's book, Communion. That, not right away, mind you, because that thing was scary looking. But finally, I decided, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing one of those. I don't know what made me feel that way. I don't know how I came to that conclusion. I think Whitley's book came out in the middle to late 80s, somewhere along the way. I read it close to 1990, maybe. So 1992, I was ready to I was ready to make contact with the other side or with beings from another place, as crazy as that sounds. And so I decided to meditate as I was going to sleep. I kept repeating what I wanted to see as I was going to sleep. I think I told myself, I want to make contact. I want to make contact. I want to make contact. And I really believe you can program yourself by doing that. It happened with my father. I wanted him to come to me, and he did in 1996, after I kept saying that. So in 1992, I don't know where I read it, some book, I'm sure, some metaphysical book. I kept saying, I want to meet an alien, want to meet an alien, want to make contact, whatever I said. And in the middle of the night, I woke up, at least I believe I woke up, and I looked around the room, and on the left-hand side of the room, first of all, I sat up in bed. It was very vivid, very real. I can remember to this day. It's getting more and more vague now, but I can remember. I sat up, I looked around to the left, and of course, what made me sit up like that, you know? And I looked to the left, and there was this being that would define as a gray, what they call gray. And it looked at me, I looked at it, and it almost in an instant froze me. I could not move. Now, I don't know if they use a death ray. What's on a death ray? I would be dead by now. It wasn't a death ray. I believe they use their mind. I believe they have the ability. If you listen to Jim Maroney, he's been on my show, and others that have talked about it. I believe they have the ability to stun you with their mind, and then you can't move. And that's to protect themselves. So they can put a thought on your head, and they'll tell you, you just can't move. That's what I think they do. Some people might think they have a weapon of some sort. I don't believe so. I think they're so advanced, they don't need that. I was unable to move, and I was getting really frightened because I couldn't move my head hardly. I couldn't move my body, my chest. I was having trouble breathing. It's like, wow. And I was getting really starting to hyperventilate, and then a thought hit me, and it said, if you have no intention of hurting this being, it will let you go. And I thought, no, I don't have any intention. I just want to see it. And so when I thought that, it started to loosen its grip. Now, this whole time, it had started on the left-hand side, a little bit away from my bed, and it almost like glided right next to my bed and then over to the right and around the corner so I could see most of it. And I was thinking, don't come any closer. That's close enough, man. And then I also was able to move my arms and my legs a little bit. My arms, not my legs, but my upper half of my body. And then I'm out like a light. And I don't wake up till 9 or 10 o'clock the next morning. And for years, I thought it was not real because it could be a dream. But then, you know, I've had these kind of things happen, and they're very vivid. And also, I've had these things happen. And, yeah, I don't remember my dreams unless I wake up right after them. I do not remember my dreams. Now, people give you every excuse in the book. I remember talking to our engineer. He goes, well, there's research now that says people can remember their dreams in the middle of the night. I don't. I still to this day do not remember. I think they just try to make up more excuses when people see things. Well, yeah. Keep piling on the excuses. There are people out there who do not bother to look into anything. And they just point to this over here and say, well, that's the truth. There it is right there. Instead of taking the time, listening to all the people I've listened to or anybody. Reading a book, getting some insight, talking to people you know. The biggest thing for me has been the people I've met on my journey that are from this area that have stories to tell me. That's probably been the biggest convincer, if that's even a word, but what's convinced me the most, because I realized that I just believe there are things out there. And by talking to other people, many of them have confirmed. And then you kind of get a feeling that you're being connected to certain areas, which I definitely believe. So now we look at International UFO Day, and I think half the population believes. I think it could be close to that. And half does not believe. And then you have also a percentage who are, they just don't believe in anything. And unless they can see it with their own eyes and feel it with their hands. And you ask them, what about God? And some of those people don't believe in God, but some of those people say, well, that's something you have to have faith in, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. So it's okay to believe in all that, but other things that people have witnessed. Nobody's ever witnessed God, have they? I guess they have in the Old Testament. But not in a long time. Not in a long time. So to me, there's very solid evidence if you start looking around. Bud Hopkins did a lot of research. If you're familiar with his name, he did a lot of research on UFO abductees. And he did, I think he did a real good job of that. Towards the end of his life, he took some heat on things, and I don't know why that was. I didn't really understand that. Didn't really study it. He took some heat. Maybe they didn't say think he was as clinical as he could be. I don't know what it was. I don't remember even remember what it was. It doesn't matter to me. I believe Bud Hopkins. I believe Whitley Strieber. I believe that he's being accurate. There are many out there who have said this. There are people locally who I've talked to. There's a show I did about a man and a woman that were from, well, this area, generally Escanaba area. And she was taken in the middle of the night. He actually woke up and she was gone. And he got mad. He didn't know where she was. So he went and laid on the couch. She gets put back. They were very gentle with her. And she was put back. And when she got back, he wasn't on the couch. He wasn't in the bed. He was on the couch. So she had to go wake him up. But she was brought aboard this ship and was shown things. And she said they were really, really nice to me. Now, this surprised me because everything I had heard up to that, they were kind of scary. They bring you in. You don't know what's going on. Like Whitley Strieber claimed. And what are they doing to you? And this is horrible and all this stuff. And it's like, well, I don't know. You know, every time there's a movie done about something, you wonder if something's exaggerated. But I read the book. I read the book, and it said it pretty clearly. These things terrified him. So did they get greater understanding, or is it different for everybody how they treat people? And that depends on what you want to experience. I don't know. That's what people say as well. I guess my point on it is that she was treated extremely well. And it reminded me of Jim Maroney, although he was frightened at first. He said when they left, he cried. It was like losing a family member. Now, this gal, if you go back in my archives to it's one of my first 10 shows. She was shown their planet. And they told her, do you want to lie down? Are you okay? Are you concerned about your planet? What do you think's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Asking her all these questions. But they were very gentle with her. And she was able to see what their planet looked like. They showed kind of like a picture of it out the window. Gently placed back in her bed when she was done. And that's when she realized her husband was sleeping on the couch. Of course, he was there because she wasn't in bed. He was a little miffed. Now, he told me something about he had some kind of negative dream. Like they were not happy that these beings, somebody was not happy that these beings were contacting her. And they were trying to give him grief for it. And certainly is possible. I think there's probably been a battle going on for a long time. So where do these beings come from and who are they? And what do they want? You know, when I look at, there's a show called Ancient Aliens, and everything on the show has to do with aliens. They call angels. Well, maybe that's an alien. No. There are things as angels, guys. You guys are such science guys that you don't realize there are some other things. Why can't we get a show that takes spirit and some of that stuff, and you can mix it together? Because then you can find some real answers, I think. Instead of saying, well, we think these ancient aliens could have disguised themselves as angels, and maybe some of them did, but I'm saying that there are such things as angels, and they've been guiding us for a long time, and they've appeared before, I think, throughout our history, and people have reported them. And they've been here to help us more than once. And they've helped me in my life. I definitely believe in them. I know they've stepped up and helped me. So they're not aliens. No, there's not. So where do these aliens come from? Oh, they could come from anywhere. In our multi-dimensions, our future, our past, another place, a wormhole. There's so many stories. There's reports that we've had contact with them. And somewhere in the 60s, we sent away a group of our people to stay on their planet. And they left some people, some of their beings behind here. When that group of beings returned from that planet, when that group of humans, two of them had died. And That's a supposedly a military report. Whether there's any accuracy in that, I don't know. Roswell, I truly believe, happened. I believe Roswell was an incident that something crashed and they found debris, they found wreckage. Jesse Marcel was one of the people there, and he was a lieutenant. Was he a lieutenant or major? Anyway, he reported that they found something, and then, of course, the Army changed their story right after that. How many times have we heard that? And then they made him hold up a weather balloon and look like an idiot. And, of course, his son, who's still alive, says that was a bunch of garbage. He was forced to do that. Why would the son go through all that to do that? Why would he do that? If there's no truth to this. If it's just made up. It's all made up. Yeah. There's too many people that have seen too many things that know what's going on. And what is going on? I think there's several races. You know, Frank Fischino is a good friend of mine, and he's been on my show, and he's covered the Flatwoods Monster. We talked about the UFO incident involving that, where they were trying to shoot him down. The government in 1953 had orders to shoot these things down because they were invading our airspace. They weren't doing any damage, but they were going over military sites. I think they were keeping an eye on us, so the government said shoot them down. A lot of our planes disappeared. A lot of them said it was a peacetime accident. That's what the military said, which is ridiculous. How could there be so many accidents? And one of the UFOs apparently was damaged, or maybe more than one, because I think there might have been another one down in another part of the country. But there was one that went down in West Virginia, and the ship came to rest north of a football field or somewhere near a football field in Flatwoods, West Virginia. The being that was inside the craft got out and was working on it. The being, yes. It was a tall, strange-looking being. There's pictures on Frank's website, if you want to look at that, flatwoodsmonster.com. And so this being was wearing some kind of apparatus, a suit, which made it even creepier. People saw that. Frank was able to trace all this eyewitness testimony going, you know, people seeing this craft in Flatwoods, and it went on to other parts of West Virginia, and a guy driving with his wife and kids saw it as well. So there's tons of evidence to support that this was something that many, many, many people saw, and it was not swamp gas. Helium balloons? I don't know. What's the excuse they're going to use? So he did tons of research, and we both came to the conclusion that there's several races that visit here or come here. And even that day in 1953, there were a lot of different races representing themselves because there were several different types of ships that were here. So it's part of a federation, a galactic federation. I think there is. I think there's a galactic federation. And from what I know, maybe the Syrians and Pleiadians and all those people are involved. And they are here to keep an eye on us. But also, they will, I think, approach us or give us a chance to be part of this when we are ready. And we're not quite ready, apparently. And maybe that's what they're trying to do, is get us information on how all this works. Some people have the full information. And I think there are those that are here that are not necessarily of the light, that choose not to be of the light. And they can be difficult to deal with. So there's a lot going on right now on this planet. Most of it, though, I think most of them are positive beings. Some could care less, probably, about us. May think of us as less, just like a subhuman race, like we look at something that when we come across it, and they don't see the beauty of who we all are. And I think that's what happens a fair amount. Some of that happens too. So there are many reports. The most prevalent one is of people getting taken and getting abducted and getting put on these ships and then coming back, some with a memory, some without a memory, and many remembering offspring that they gave birth, or they were used to create life if they're a male. And why would you do that? Why would you procreate with a species? That just doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? And that's what communion was all about. It's like, well, they want to breed emotion back into their society. And apparently the best way they think to do that is just to take us and boom. Couldn't there be a better way? Couldn't we just be donors or something like that? I want to be an alien. Nope. That's not the way it works. You know, I think it has a lot to do with our soul agreement and where we're at. And we go, you know, before I come down to that lifetime, put me down for that UFO experience and they'll take some stuff out of me and they'll create a baby. Yeah, I'm good for that. That's not a big deal. And then you get here and you go, now, wait a second. Get your hands off me. Let go of me. Ah! That's what happens. That's what happens. So it's preordained that it's going to happen. And therefore, and if we believe it, it's only going to make it worse. If you're afraid, you're only going to make the experience worse. Now, how do you get past the fear? You have to let go, like with everything. What's the worst they can do to you? They can make you croak. They can kill you with the death ray. If they wanted to, they would have done it a long time ago. So what do you got to fear, besides fear itself? Exactly. So I would say, if you're going to approach that, don't be afraid of anything. Truly nothing can hurt you. If you put yourself in a state of mind like that, you will be protected. I believe that. Absolutely. So these beings that take us and they want to become like us, they're trying to breed that back into their culture. And they've been doing that now for quite a while, so I'm guessing it's starting to take hold. It's almost like they need it to survive. These grays, they need it to survive. The future generations are not going to be able to have emotion. Sad thing, I guess. But the good news is that I don't believe that they are in here in any way to hurt us. And I think the majority of beings that come here are not here to hurt us. I don't know them all. I'm sure there's plenty. I've had so many people tell me things, everything from, there's a gal who came in one day and said, oh yeah, I went down to a convention in Chicago. I met a bunch of aliens. They were all just like humans, just like you and I. And you couldn't even tell if they were not human. So I've heard people say that before, where they speculated that perhaps these beings, there are people amongst us that are not human, especially like Men in Black. Those are not, they seem like they're not human at all. When they show up, weird things happen. I can put it that way. But as far as, the average person that sees a UFO, you won't bring in the Men in Black. You don't have to worry. Too many people are afraid of all that stuff, and they want you to be afraid of all that. They want you to be, oh my goodness, this is terrible. Yeah, it's good to be cautious, it's good to be careful, but I also say, you got to break an egg to make an omelet. You really have to. So, what are you going to do? Make peace with it. Let it go. Don't worry about it. A lot of people do that, and I think that works pretty good. So do you believe in UFOs? I'm guessing you would be. You would if you listened to this show on a regular basis. And also, if you're listening now, you've come to the conclusion that most of my shows are maybe a little bit different, a little bit out there. Perhaps so. I've done a lot of shows regarding that topic. People that have shared things with me, I don't recall anything other more than what these people have shared with me recently. But you can always check on those, go back. You know, Gord Heath, I did a show with him about the Kinross incident. That was really fascinating. I would have never known about it had somebody, Art, not told me about it. So thank you, Art. And then also, you know, I found out a lot about two guys that I never had a chance to know. They died before I was born. And it's really sad, but maybe they go on. If the story is right from Gord, it's really interesting, especially segment 3, where they realize they're not coming home. And the two guys are aboard a ship, and they're given a choice. One wants to go home. They let him do that, basically. He has to go back in a different body. Okay, is that believable? He goes back in a different body, and he becomes he's Eugene Moncla, and then he becomes Gord Heath, the guy telling the story. And Gord has all these memories. So it's pretty cool. It's a story about a disappearing plane. 1952, I believe, or three, and the man who was involved in all of that, who came up with this story, did research for it, he's the one, Gord Heath, who really made a difference in the fact that he's heard so many things, seen so many things, and he's been fuzzy on them, but it's really come to him. He's pieced it all together, and it's amazing to see what he's done. The story of this pilot and his co-pilot that disappeared. And one of them appeared to Gord when he was 3 years old. Now, why would that happen? This man appeared to Gord, and he was in physical form, top form. He appeared to Gord and told him, he tried to get him to remember some things about Eugene Moncla. Well, that was the pilot that died. And this co-pilot, tall co-pilot, navigator, he was trying to convince him to remember some things, because the only way he was going to remember being Eugene Moncla is by remembering the past life of Eugene Moncla. So according to the story, Eugene Moncla died, and right as he was dying, his soul went into Gord. And Gord remembers being on that ship for some reason. And that's when he got his soul, and that's when he was given an opportunity to be what he is. That's interesting stuff. Gord was born right after that event happened, where Eugene Moncla, supposedly the plane disappeared. So he went down and knew things about Gord that only Gord would know. Knew things about his brother, his sister, where she lived, all these things. Went out and impressed some of the people in the family. Other ones, not so much. But it tells you that there's something there. Something is going on. Even if he is wrong about his speculation about what happened to the two pilots, something unique was going on that day, and you wonder what it is and who it affects. And there have been many other people I've had on my show that I've seen in passing, UFOs. Heck, I could bring my whole family on. I could march them in here one by one. They've all seen something. So pretty much most every one of them have seen something. And you can't tell them no. No. I'm tired today. Well, that's all I want to talk about, is the International UFO Day, and hopefully people are starting to wake up. Jeez, oh man, what's it going to take? Well, I want to see a ship land at the White House. They probably already landed there. You want to see them land something where a common man can see? At a big event. Maybe at a Super Bowl or a sporting baseball event. You know, they could show up at that, and that would get people's attention. Now, do you think they would be filmed for any length of time? Nope. They better bring their own cameras, because they tend to cover things up here. Now, why is that? For our own protection, or because they don't want the truth to come through? And these are the beings I've been telling you about. They're bringing the truth. We'll have another show coming up pretty soon. Probably one with my good buddy out of Florida. She's going to call in Joy, and we'll try to talk to her. Get something lined up. All right? Take care.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.